Hi, hello. We have a jam-packed episode of the Dunker Spot for you. We have some WNBA Finals reactions to get to. The first two games are in the books. The Aces lead as the series shifts to Phoenix. We'll talk about what we saw and what we may see as the series shifts. And then it is time for us to start our NBA division previews. We start with the Northwest Division. Got to start with the champs with OKC. We've got thoughts on the Thunder, the Nuggets, the Wolves, the Blazers, and the Jazz. We hope you enjoy this episode. Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of the Dunker Spot. We are part of the Yahoo Sports Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, the always excellent Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing, sir?
Feeling good, feeling great, happy to be here, excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for embracing your bounce, Nikias. It's time to hoop it up, buddy.
It is indeed time to hoop it up. We are starting, of course, with the WNBA Finals as the series is getting ready to shift to Phoenix. I'm flying out there a little bit later. But we have a 2-0 series right now, Steve. The Las Vegas Aces taking care of business, taking care of home court so far with two victories to open things up. An 89-86 thrilling game one victory. And then not as close of a game in game two, a 91-78 victory for the Aces. A 2-0 series lead for the Las Vegas Aces. And Steve, I have to start with another shout out to you. Because as you have been saying for years, and as you said on the latest episode of the Dunker Spot podcast, the playoffs are less about how good you are and more about can you solve a specific problem or can you pose a specific problem to a team. It felt like the problem, as we discussed on the preview, but a big problem entering this one and what was posed to the Las Vegas Aces in the first half of game one was, what are you going to do with the Alyssa Thomas pick and roll? What are you going to do when Monika Koamakani or Sammy Whitcomb screams for Alyssa Thomas? Do you want to switch? If not, how sturdy is your coverage up top? What does the help coverage look like? If you do give up a matchup, how much help do you want to send, et cetera? And in the first half of game one, the Mercury pretty much got whatever they wanted. And in particular, that second quarter where they were able to extend their lead, the Aces looked outright helpless, trying to deal with the Alyssa Thomas drives, the Alyssa Thomas driving kicks. Kalia Copper was draining threes all over the place. It didn't feel like the Aces had a real answer for it. We get to the second half of game one, and you do see either whether it's Dana Evans or Jewel Lloyd, they're playing a little bit closer to the screen on that. But more than anything, we didn't see the action that often because the Aces decided, okay, we just got to go zone. We got to protect the middle. We got to protect our guards. Let's go zone, try to disrupt the rhythm. We get to game two. The Aces once again do a better job of defending the Alyssa Thomas pick and roll. And then the Mercury just go away from it largely, which annoyed me immensely. And I'm going to have you talk me off the ledge on that front. But that felt like the biggest problem across the first two games. It felt like the Aces found some better solutions. And the Mercury also helped them out by taking it off the table. And I think that disrupted what the Mercury wanted to do offensively, that helped the Aces play more out of their defense. We saw a lot of transition baskets in that game, too. But that's kind of where it started for me, just the Alyssa Thomas of it all.
I think we can come back to the Alyssa Thomas of it all. And I think we're forgetting a massive issue for the Phoenix Mercury, which is that they are coming off a game where Asia Wilson scored 20 points in the first half, and then Jackie Young scored 21 points in the third quarter, which, pardon me, is the most in a quarter in WNBA Finals history.
Yeah, seems important.
That's on top of a Dana Evans game in game one. That is an issue. And so the Aces have gotten their stars going. They've gotten their guard play. That's a big reason why they're up 2-0. To the Alyssa Thomas of it all, right? Mm-hmm. I hear that you're annoyed by the usage. This is what you have to remember about a series. You don't have to take and stop in action every single time. No. You just have to do it well enough to where they move to something else. And the Aces did a good enough job of making it so they had to move to something else. Now, here's the thing you got to remember about the Mercury, right? We talk about inverted pick and roll with Alyssa Thomas all the time. It can't be the only thing they have on the table. Mm-hmm. And I think that was the biggest thing they tried to do in game two, was try to get Satu moving off ball, trying to get Ka getting downhill. So that way they have other things that are flowing and going. And now we can use this as the game ender or the let's push this lead to six type action, which is what they did to the Liberty and to the Lynx. If you go back to that Liberty series, they were trying to put Sabrina in action all the time in game one. Mm-hmm. She did a good job. Game two, they turned the volume down, but when they used it was more important. Mm-hmm. That's kind of where Phoenix was at. So does that help you, or are you still kind of on the ledge?
I don't know. I think that makes a ton of sense. For me, it was more, and I think I noted it during the game, like they needed to find a better balance and they need to have other things going. And I appreciate it. Like, for example, you mentioned Kalia Copper getting downhill. Like, we talked about the stagger series for Phoenix in the preview, where you start Kalia Copper in the corner and now you don't know who's cutting, who's diving. You get her turn the corner, you get her downhill. So, like, I like that. My thing is, and to your broader point, and what the Mercury, I think, wants to get to, you want to have all of those things. Game two, to me, felt more like, okay, we are just doing the Ka Satu stuff. And we didn't get that in addition to the AT portion. And, like, I didn't like that balance for them. And so I think the Aces deserve credit. To your point, they did well enough, you know, in the second half of game one to start off game two of defending it and having the Mercury go to something else. I just don't think the Mercury should have said, all right, well, we're just doing almost exclusively other stuff now.
Well, you got to remember, foul trouble, game flow, things change. These things can differ. You know, mm-hmm. you can't necessarily automatically pull out the sheet and piece of paper and run everything you want exactly like that.
Of course.
I think the overwhelming story is now, is Phoenix in a position where the Aces have found something that put them over the top? Because if you go back to that game two, the Mercury had a heck of a start. Aces offense felt stagnant. They were going under against Jackie Young. Here's the thing. They had a great start. It was 16-12, and now they're down 18-16. Mm-hmm. And so the question in my head is, can the Mercury separate from the Aces? Can they hit the right pressure points at the right time? Can they take the Aces' four-guard lineup off the table? Because if they could play Asia, Chelsea Gray, Jewel Lloyd, Jackie Young, and Dan Evans at the same time, are you going to be able to hit the right notes? Can you drive and create pressure points? Can you make them not want to switch? Can you hit the right buttons? Because here's the thing. You mentioned Natasha Mack after game one, wanting to see more Natasha Mack. The Aces are dialed in on their game plan when Natasha Mack's on the floor. Mm-hmm. Switch, you throw it in the post, we double, you got to play out of it. That limits those minutes. It makes it interesting.
No, I think that's fair. Like, I think for me, just to bounce off your Lionel point very quickly, I guess that was the other part of what annoyed me a little bit about the process for Phoenix's offense in that game, too. Because, like, I don't think the Alyssa Thomas pick and roll is the only avenue for them to, like, poke at matchups, right? They have off-ball actions they can get into. They can obviously get into the post. You mentioned some of the doubles that the Aces can sprinkle in with Natasha Max on the floor in particular. But it's just, like, I don't know. Like, it felt like a lack of purpose at times for their half-court offense. And, like, that bothered me. Like, I would much rather be entering this podcast saying, like, I did see broader strokes what they tried to do, how they tried to establish Satu, how they tried to establish Ka. But I would much rather be saying, like, I see it, these are the attempts, good job, Aces, for defending it, versus, like, some of the game flow feeling wonky for them. Some of the overall balance feeling wonky for them. And again, I don't want to take away credit to the Aces defense for that. But I don't know. It just felt a bit rickety to me, Steve. Like, it just, I didn't love it.
Go on. Which part felt rickety?
Top of the conversation, to circle back to the AT portion. Like, I don't think you had to punt on it to the degree that they did. And then from there, even with trying to establish, like, Satu, for example, like, it didn't feel like there was enough intention about where she was getting some of her touches. It did feel like a lot of above the break, here's high pick and roll, make a decision. And, like, I didn't feel enough of some of the slicing into the post for Satu. Like, we saw elements of that in the first quarter, but as the game went on, it didn't feel like a ton of that, at least not to the degree that we saw in, like, the first half of game one, for an example.
What do you mean by intention? Like, where did they catch? Because my job as a defense is to not let you catch in those areas.
Of course.
So even if you set a flare and you're supposed to go curl to the post, if I navigate it under and I force you to flare to the wing, mm-hmm. is that bad offense or just a read?
No, I think it's more of a read. And again, that can be credit to the defense. But, like, even where, again, like, even in game two, it felt like more of, like, the flares for Satu to the perimeter versus I wish I could remember the exact timestamp, but like I know early in the first quarter in game one, it was very much Satu starts in the corner. Let's get a guard screen for Satu to get her a post touch. And like, even if you're pushing that catch out, she's getting it below the free throw line versus the 3-point line. Like, it did feel like in general more, you know, off ball actions designed to get her touches on the perimeter versus the post. It felt like more pick and roll usage for Satu in game two versus game one. So that's where I'm just like, hey, getting Satu going is a good thing. Getting some touches for Satu in general is a good thing, and doing so in different areas is a good thing. Prioritize the ones closer to the basket for Satu. The Aces are going to do their best to push those catches out, but at least have the intention being, this is where we are trying to get her the ball. It felt like even where we wanted her to start was more perimeter-based than I would have liked. Could be wrong on that, but like that's just what it felt like in getting to. So that's where I'm just like, hey, let's recalibrate a little bit. That's why I'm not pressing the Mercury or Cook button. I think these are correctable issues for them. But okay, that's where a lot of my frustration came from. Like, okay, what are we trying to do?
Okay. I'll ask this question. Do you feel like the Aces found something in pick and roll with Asia Wilson in game two?
I felt like they did. Like, I felt like they did a better job of reading what Phoenix's defense was and where their help was coming from. This is something that Asia talked about a little bit over the weekend heading into the game too. That part did feel better. And just in general, like, I've enjoyed some of the flow that they've gotten to out of Horns. And just having Asia plus insert guard here at the elbow. Like, they poked at the Sammy Whitcomb matchup towards the end of game one. They went to that, at least that alignment a few times in game two and got good stuff out of it. Like, one of the Asia baskets in that 13-point second quarter that she had, they set up in Horns. You think it's about to be a setup for another middle pick and roll that they had success with, to your point. And Asia just does like the Dwight Howard spinoff. And it's a quick pass to Chelsea Gray. She gets a layup out of it. It's like, ooh, no, they are starting to flow now. They're making live reads that this is not good if you are the Phoenix Mercury. So, like, I did enjoy the pick and roll usage. I think because the Mercury, with how they're kind of like trying to disguise and layer their help, it felt like more cutting before and during pick and rolls for the Aces to clear more space. So I like that little subtle tweak for them. But it just felt like a lot of two-on-two and pick and roll because of all that cutting. And this is where you get Asia rolling into space or Asia short rolling and getting to some of those mid-range jumpers that we saw in the second quarter. This is where you get the Jackie Young explosion in the third quarter. And a lot of those were pull-ups and drives. And I'm just like, hey, man, again, to your point, you don't want the Aces to feel like we can just get to you in a myriad of ways. Like, that can't be the world that the Mercury live in.
I think that's the toughest part for game two. And that's what Phoenix has to take off the table. You started to see Asia Wilson begin to be able to roll. And you started to see Jackie Young begin to be even more decisive in pick and roll. Mm-hmm. And so now, are you going to be caught in a position where we don't want to switch certain matchups? I asked the question in the preview, how many people can guard Asia Wilson? We got a clear vision after game two with Alyssa Thomas in foul trouble. But if it's now Chelsea Gray can read the defense because it's not an automatic switch and I can get Asia either on the short roll or late on the roll, throw it over the top. If it's Jackie Young knowing it's an under, I can go to rescreen, I can turn the corner, I can get to my jump shot. That's going to give the Aces kind of the base to walk through and go through some of those tough moments where the Mercury defense is active and going and flowing. Mm-hmm. You got to take that off the table.
Yeah.
And this is where game three is a must win. Now, we've seen Phoenix be resilient this whole playoff run. We've missed shots. We stick to our game plan. We do what we do. It's tough to win in Phoenix. You can ask both Minnesota and New York. Game three is a big one. They need that one because here's the other issue. You now have Asia Wilson staring at the finish line of this season. Mm-hmm. You have Chelsea Gray staring at the finish line of this season. You have Jackie Young staring at the finish line of this season where we can see it. We can taste it. We now are here where we didn't think we would be. And in a series, you are a one game away from something happening. You already have the Dane Evans game, right?
Yep.
Then you have to deal with Asia and Jackie Young. Mm-hmm. It's a Chelsea game. It's a Jewel game. It's any combination away from being one game away from being sent home. So game three is huge for Phoenix.
Yeah, they have to have it. I think one should have noted this at the top. I was doing the quick game recap or whatever. Satu did turn the ankle. Said very strongly and distinctly after the game, I'm fine. So I'd imagine she's going to be playing in game three, but something to keep an eye on that front. As the Mercury, as you said, Steve, entering a must win in this game three. So if Satu's good to go, you obviously want a better version of Satu. I think Kalia Copper has just been, at minimum, their most consistent scorer through the first two games. Three-point barrage in the first half of game one. Was able to get downhill a lot more in game two. You want stronger second halves, but she is game. You're not worried about how the competitiveness, the effort level, anything like that when the game comes to Kalia Copper. And so for me, heading into this one, my eyes are naturally going to be, okay, what are the Mercury trying to get to offensively in this one? With the defense, I guess I'll pose this question to you, Steve. Is there anything you want to see the Mercury tweak with their defense? More help sent somewhere in matchups? Or is it just doing a better version of what they're already trying to establish on that end?
Do a better version.
Okay.
I don't think you have to over-index. I think you want to defend the Aces in a certain way. Asia is Asia, and you have to deal with that part of it. But you don't want to be in a position where you're not putting two on the ball on Jackie. You don't want to be in a position where you're putting two on the ball against Chelsea. So you kind of have to just keep the ball in front, contain, contest, and do your best to kind of slow the Aces down, get them stagnant, mix in unders, keep the ball in front. That's the biggest thing for them. They turn those stops into offense in Phoenix. That's a different story. I still think the funniest part is, and I'm keeping an eye on Alyssa Thompson's aggression.
Mm-hmm.
Seven shots in the first half, I believe, two field goal attempts in the third quarter. A third quarter where they literally shot 60%, and Satu was 3-for-5, Kyle was 2-for-5,
mm-hmm.
and it didn't matter because the Aces kept scoring.
Let them up, yeah.
So it gets interesting.
You need that. I guess related to that, Steve, I'll get circling back to the defense very quickly. Like, we did get in the second half, like, Natasha McMoore on Asia. We got some Dawana Bonham minutes on Asia instead of AT. I think a lot of that, and Nate Tibbetts spoke to this after the game, a lot of that was just the foul trouble. But heading into the game three, either just as a way to try to avoid some of the foul stuff, would you start with Natasha Mack on Asia in game three? Use AT more as a roamer? Okay.
Mm-mm.
All right. Understood.
I personally would put Alyssa Thomas on Asia Wilson as much as possible. If the game flow dictates it and changes it, that's fine. But down 2-0, you can't get too entertaining with these type of items. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Also, you know what? Real quick, salute to Megan Gustafson for taking the Alyssa Thomas assignment in the third quarter.
She sure did. Didn't win all of them, but she certainly competed. Also, Steve, the Megan Gustafson drive against Dawana Bonner. What's your live reaction to the drive and finish?
And one.
Because I was on press roll. I was on press roll like, oh my goodness. What a play. But shout out to Megan Gustafson. I think circling back to our preview, we both highlighted, hey, this is going to have to be, the guards are going to have to show up for both squads. As you mentioned, Dana Evans in game one, finals history with 5 made threes and 4 steals off the bench in that game one. Jewel Lloyd, quietly in that game one, 13 points in the first half, 18 points total. Game two, you have the Jackie game if you want to include her in the guard room. But also, just what a series this has been for Chelsea Gray. Like, not even criticism, the thing I kind of wondered about, and we talked about in the previews, like, hey, when is she just going to say, I can just get to my spots against Monique because I'm stronger than her, et cetera. Like, we haven't had the massive scoring aggression game yet from Chelsea, but timely baskets for her, and defensively, just fighting her tail off. I think 6 stocks in game two because of the quick hands. She is doing her job on the defensive end. She deserves a salute for that. Also, the playmaking has certainly been there. Lots of fun passes in that game, too. But more than that, high-level playmaking without turning the ball over. And if the Aces are able to contain that portion of the program, it's going to be tough for the Mercury to get those transition baskets that they've been so good at generating throughout this postseason run and when they're at their best, what they've been able to do during the regular season. So ball security obviously is going to be huge in that one. I'm excited to see what this game 3 is going to look like. This is obviously going to be a backs against the wall type situation for Phoenix. Like, you would think at minimum, like, their role players are a little bit more comfortable at home. Do we get to their end? Do we get like the Sammy Whitcomb game, which he makes 3 or 4 threes? Should also note, like, after game one, like, she also had the hyperextension of the knee, ended up playing in game two, but wasn't the most effective game for her in that game two. So monitoring the health, but does she light it up in front of the home crowd? Do we get a Monique jumper game in front of the home crowd? Because either one of those things could change things for the Phoenix Mercury. Allow them to set their defense more. They better hope so. I tweeted you during the game. As the offense shifted to more Alyssa Thomas as a screener, but a lot more pick and roll usage for Monique to at least kick off possessions. sprinkled in a couple of pull-up jumpers. Like, okay, that's cool. But there are also some driving kicks to Monique, some scramble situations where she has some open threes. Did not knock them down. And I was like, ooh, I had your voice in my head. That's why I tweeted at you. I was like, yeah, this is the one where the aces are comfortable when they're sending doubles. Normally you have like that split on the backside. We're trying to play between the corner and the wing. It's like, nope, double, we're sinking here. If the ball goes to Monique, hey, we will deal with it. Good job if she makes it. If she doesn't, then we cool. And so that reigns, that looms pretty large with this. When she has the ball, she's going to have to make good decisions. I think thought she largely did that in game two in terms of the on-ball usage, but they need the threes to fall for her. She shot well from three during the regular season overall. That has to maintain. If not, guard questions percolate for Phoenix. Because then it's like, okay, we need the defense from Monique, but if she's not, if bases are helping off of her, and they're also helping off of like Natasha Mack in the starting lineup, that's cramping the offense. We go Sammy Wickham, she can shoot, but now the aces want to put her in action. What are we doing there? Like, do we see Lexi held in game three or game four? Yeah, so I'm just like,
The eight is the eight. Because here's the thing, right? It's just simple for Phoenix. Need better play from your bench. Need stronger defense. Liz Thomas has to be aggressive. Satu and Kyle got to keep it going. Mm-hmm. Their plan is what it is. Ace is game three. Got to play with purpose. Got to know the assignment. Can't play games in Phoenix. Asia and Jackie have to be on point. The defense has to be locked in early. They cannot have the starts that they've had in game one and game two in that arena. They've been able to kind of battle back and work through it and whittle through it. It's different when you play that way in Phoenix and you got to hear Mighty Mercury 17 times in the first 10 minutes. So very intrigued to see what game three looks like, but exciting series, great basketball so far, and it's been fun, man.
There we go. We've been doing this pod too long. I was about to hit the Mighty Mercury reference and you hit it first. And there we go. All right. There's your double. Anything else you want to shout out? Any questions you have before we move to the NBA section?
No, I thought I hit that correctly. So you can throw us to a break.
You did that. I just wanted to make sure I don't want to step on any toes. With that, we'll take a quick break. And when we return, it's time to preview the Northwest Division. And we are back, and it is time, Steve, finally, to kick off these NBA season previews as we edge closer to the start of the NBA regular season. And we start with the Northwest Division. Most of the teams have played at least one preseason game right now, but also it's the division with the champions in it. We got to start with the champions, and thus, let's kick things off with the Oklahoma City Thunder, Steve. Last season, 68-14, seems pretty good. Third in offense, first in defense, first in net rating. As we generally do with these previews, we start with what we're most excited about. And for me, I want to see this team play defense again. As I said, I feel like 87 different times through the regular season last year, they weren't just the best defense in the league. They were flirting with historically great, particularly their half-court defense. The pressure, the switching, the way they were able to fly around when they did want to send double teams, like they were just all over the place, forcing turnovers. And that largely held true during the postseason as well. And so for me, what is this going to look like after a championship? I don't imagine things are going to change all that much schematically, but just in terms of, are they actually going to force turnovers on what feels like a quarter of the possessions that they face defensively? Is that actually something that could be sustainable, or are teams going to work to ding them in different ways? Like, that kind of dichotomy is going to be interesting to me, but ultimately, Cason Wallace and Lu Dort and Alex Caruso and Chet Holmgren on the back end, and Isaiah Hartenstein with his scheme versatility, and Shea being very good, and Jalen Williams putting together an all-defense caliber season. Like, they just have so many guys to throw at people, and I am just excited to watch that team play defense. What excites you the most about the Thunder heading in?
I mean, there's a lot. The Oklahoma City Thunder are the best team in basketball, and they're the best team in basketball until proven otherwise. And so for me, when it comes to this season, it's seeing what is the next evolution for them. You see Shai Gilgeous-Alexander saying, I didn't really come to only get one. And that's the mindset coming off a championship season from the Thunder. And this is a group that's grown together. We've seen them evolve every single year. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's what is the next step for this team? I know everyone goes into dynasty talk, right? Like, this is the dynasty. Well, we can cool down with that, but they have the potential on the upside because we don't know what the next improvement's going to be. They've gone from a team that's heavy on drive and kick to a team that has more movement in pick and roll, They have a versatility defensively that other teams just do not. You mentioned it, but the personnel that they have in the regular season to cause chaos, in the playoffs to defend multiple top guys, wings, guards, etc., it puts a lot of pressure on you. So what is the next step? Shai Gilgeous-Alexander has grown every single year that he's been in the league. We've seen the drives. We've seen that turn into the counters with the step backs. We've seen the post-ups. We've seen elbow work. We've seen the growth from three-point line. How does he get even better? What's that look like for OKC? Jalen Williams, what's his next step? What happens when he becomes someone that you have to put two on the ball against in different areas of the floor? Where is his growth point? Drives have been there. Does the shot get there? Is he more decisive? What does that look like for OKC? What happens when Chet Holmgren takes another leap? Like, these are the things that are in my head, right? They're already very good. There's still room for them to be better. On the flip side, they have everyone looking at them trying to figure out, how do we stop this? How do we put a stop to this? How do we get them back in the box? How do we chase them down? And that's going to be the fascinating part of this season for me. Who cracks it? Because a lot of these teams are putting things together to try and counteract what they have. You want to go double big? We can go, we can do that. We can switch a whole lot. We have different personnel. You got to guard us in a different way. That's going to be the fun of the season for me, is seeing what OKC tries to do going forward and how the league tries to correct what they've done.
I love that, Steve. And funny enough, my biggest question heading in for OKC, if I read from my notes, how does the offense evolve, if at all? Related to that, how do teams try to stifle them? So we are very much aligned on, like, big picture questions about the Thunder heading into this one. And I think for me, like, I do wonder, I think the Isaiah Hartenstein of it all is really interesting to me. One, he's very good. He has added, as you've mentioned already, a level of versatility on both ends for OKC. And I wonder if the next evolution for OKC offensively includes just featuring him more often. Not that he's going to be, like, better than Shai or Jalen or Chet. Of course not. But is the diversity of where you could put him, his passing ability, et cetera, is that a way to diversify the offense enough to where you have a slightly higher level of movement, a slightly higher level of unpredictability, and you can always lean on flat spacing for Shai and insert guard here to screen for him. Flat screen, Shai gets the boogie, or Jalen Williams gets the boogie. I think related to that, like, how do we see Shai and Jalen interact together offensively? Are there more actions? Is there more intention behind finding actions or finding setups to where both of them are threats at the same time? Like, something that you in particular brought up with the Boston Celtics over the last 2-3 years is when they go with, like, those double pin downs. Like, Al Horford is somebody handling up top. Jaylen Brown's getting a screen from Derek White. Jaylen Brown's getting a screen from Jrue Holiday. And now you kind of got options. And they can respace beyond that, depending on who gets the ball and whatever. As simple as that is, do we get more of that kind of set up for OKC, to where you have Shai on one side, you got Jalen Williams on the other side, and now defenses have to choose, where are we sending help from? Wait, are we switching this or not? Oh, snap, we switched this against Shai. They've cleared the floor. Oh, goodness. What are we supposed to do now? Are we sending him a double? Because one of the things that popped, particularly in the latter half of the finals, was Shai feels like he leveled up in real time as a playmaker and the guy that can read the floor and make those passing reads. So it's just like, do we want to give him a higher dose of that to try to slow them down? Because, like, if he can just do that now, that puts us back in a pickle. I don't know what to do with that. So I'm really curious to see, like, what tweaks are made offensively with OKC. So I think you hit the nail on the head on that front.
I think to your OKC offense point, there is a decisiveness that this team tends to play with. Mm-hmm. And they come in each year with something else that they add to the program. And I think that's something that Coach Dadnall's really put into them as far as building muscles up and being ready to flex them. So I wouldn't be surprised. This is the plus of continuity. We know what we do well. We know what we have to do to have success. If this is a team that gets the ball up quicker, if they make quicker decisions and get the ball side to side, if they have more movement and cutting on top of pick and roll and ISO play, that's where it gets interesting. Because I think it's the depth for OKC that gets them where they want to go. You know, it's the fact that even if you look at the preseason game they played, I don't think they brought their top six to that one because they have six preseason games. They were just looked like they had been together for 3 months, moving the ball, getting up and down the court, making good decisions side to side, backdoor cuts. Like, that's where they kind of get that lift of the system, the work they've put in, the understanding of who they are. Everyone kind of knows what they can do within this team. And that gives them the benefit of the doubt throughout the regular season. Then it enhances them in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm. The big game for Aaron Wiggins, huh? Thought he was thought he was pretty solid in the preseason game. But no, overall, definitely agree with you. They certainly have they have their reads and process set up there. So I want to sprinkle in the little joke. Quick question for you, Steve, before we head to like the X Factor portion of this. How do you feel about OKC's 3-point volume? Do you think that is part of, I guess, just the overall shot problem? Do you feel like that is going to be more of an emphasis for them heading into this year? Do you feel like it needs to be?
I don't think it needs to be. I mean, when you are a very good team, I don't think you have to necessarily change your process to an insane degree. Is this they don't take as many as they need to, or?
I think there's room for upside. And again, like I said at the top, they were the third best offense in basketball. So, like, obviously, they don't need to completely reinvent the wheel offensively. I do think part of their offensive evolution, stylistically or not, there's room to bump up the three-point volume, because I think that is part of what got them in trouble in the loss against Dallas 2 years ago. And I think that's part of the reason why Denver in particular felt so comfortable going zone against them in their series. Like, okay, we're going to dare these guys to not only knock down shots, we're going to dare them to take some of these. We want to flood the middle. We want to make sure, shoot, we dare you. And again, OKC ultimately won that series and won the finals. But like, I think that was at least part of the calculus. And so I do wonder, like, do I think they need to be like top three in 3-point rate? Like, no. But I do think there's a little bit of room.
Well, I mean, who's not taking threes for this team? I mean, if you look at these, a lot of these guys get these threes up during the game. I think for me, it's a thin line for this specific team, because if I'm defending the Thunder, I want you in quick shot territory. Mm-hmm. I want you in that space where you are taking the first available shot. You are taking this first three, and I didn't have to work as hard. And I have to contain the drive. I don't have any movement to deal with. We go on the other end. Now you got to do it again and face set defense. That's been the one sticky point for me with OKC during this run, even last year during the playoffs. Hey, yeah,
that's true.
Can we get them in a scenario where they are making quick decisions, taking pressure off of us, where, okay, yeah, that's a quality shot, but we didn't have to deal with X, Y, and Z. We'll live with that. Now you got to play defense. Mm-hmm. So I think I get what you're saying, but at the same time, if I'm OKC, I don't necessarily want to become that type of squad, because now, sweet.
No, I think that's fair. And that's why I was like, I wanted to be careful to note, like, I don't need this to be a drastic bump up in 3-point volume. It's very much a margin deal. And I think, you know, to your earlier point about Shea in particular, like, how does he level up? Something that we saw in the second half of the year, more comfortable. Oh, you're going under. I'm just taking these pull up threes. You don't want all of them to be with like 18 on the clock, to your point. But okay, I'm more comfortable going here. Jalen Williams, we saw what kind of mid range pull up postseason that he had. Like, do some of those turn into more pull-up threes? And so I think you're talking about, like, many, maybe not many leaps, but, like, just kind of refinement offensively for those two. If they're more comfortable with that shot, I think that could aid them in getting more two on the ball. Okay, we absolutely can't just switch this, because there's the pull-up pocket for him. We can't just play drop against Jalen Williams to the degree that we saw for him, at least during the regular season, because now he's just taking these. Chet Holmgren, something that I talked about during last year's postseason run. Like, how comfortable is he shooting against contests? So it's more so a comfort deal. Can we edge this up a little bit versus we need y'all to be the 17-18 Rockets now? Because that doesn't serve them well. But that's all I had on that front. To the breakout / X-Factor portion, Steve. I guess it's funny to ask, like, who could change life for OKC considering they just came off a championship. But, like, who's a player that you're keeping a closer eye on heading into this year?
I mean, pick a name out of a hat. Am I right?
Yeah, they got plenty of guys, man. But good.
I mean, here's the thing, right? They have so many guys that are established within their roles that help them on a night-to-night basis. Like, I mean, you could go Topic. I can understand why people would say that. Maybe you sprinkle in a Usman Dieng if he takes a leap. I'm going to go Chet Holmgren. What does that look like? If Chet is a different player, that's the number one thing for me in my brain. Mm-hmm. If he night in, night out is someone who puts a ton of pressure on you offensively and can defend the way he does at a high level, what does that do for this team?
What does that do to the league if Chet is just...
I mean, you know, it's he's past probably the point of breakout player, but like that's the biggest one for me. I feel like he tilts the biggest scale. He carries the biggest weight for this team if he is able to level up. That's no disrespect to Jalen Williams, but he showcased it during the finals and the playoff run. If Chet now takes a similar type beat, what do you do?
No, I think that's fair. Like, I had two in my notes because I always do that. But, like, Chet, it literally in my notes, Chet is the big one. Because I think if Chet does take that leap, continues to grow as a driver, and just dealing contact out the folks and dealing with contact, and again, gets more comfortable shooting against closeouts, that's scary because the defense is just kind of there. And I think even to the defense point, like, he, even as a rookie, he's someone that guys weigh more to him. They may move him, but he absorbs it and he's able to contest or block the shot anyway because he's not giving up on a play. He's gotten better at dealing with contact defensively. And so if he can hold up on that end more and also stay healthy with that, as this Thunder team starts to get more expensive, as all these young guys come off of rookie scale contracts, value contracts, stuff like that, Isaiah Hartenstein, very highly paid and rightfully so, like, that could simplify some of the future team building questions that OKC may have. If you can just say, all right, no, Chet can deal with 34 minutes a game at the five. We do not need someone soaking up some of those assignments during the regular season. Can still have that, but you don't need it now because Chet is leveled up to this degree. Outside of that, I did have Topic as a guy. It's like, hey, if we're talking about how can we diversify the offense a little bit, here's just this creative playmaker that can operate within their core principles already. You can add a little bit more pick and roll funk so you can take some of the pressure off of, if it's like Jalen plus bench, Jalen doesn't have to handle as much, you can get him off ball more, etc. So there's that. I think outside from him, Cason Wallace is probably my guy. Does he become consistent shooter? Because if he does, like, the defense and the drives and some of the floaters he can get into, like, that already brings him to the dance. If he is consistently 37% on catch and shoot threes, you can just bank that in now. Teams may still give him those looks because we have to worry about something else, but it'll be a subtle shift on that front. We are helping off of you because we got Shea on the floor, Jalen's on the floor, et cetera, more than, oh, we don't think you could shoot. That's a totally different thing that makes him more dangerous. And obviously, again, he's an all defense caliber guy with minutes. So that's probably my list. Steve, what do you think OKC's best lineup is going to be?
Shea, Lou Dort, Alex Crusoe, Jalen Williams, Chet Holmgren.
Okay. Well, we got the same one there. So secondary question for you, because I figured we'd be aligned. What is the lineup you're most excited to see with OKC this year?
The
same one? Okay. Well, fine. I will offer the different one. We only got 8 minutes of it last season across the playoffs and everything. Shea, Cason, Caruso, Aaron Wiggins, Jalen Williams. Give me five smalls. We switch everything. We pressure the ball. Everyone can dribble and make plays. Let's have some fun. Let's bully some folks in some spot matchups. You know what I mean? We get a Boston when they want to go small. The random games against Brooklyn when they want to switch everything. Let's have some fun. We got to go Jalen at the five because we saw some Jalen at the five and that man was monstrous. Let's sprinkle in a nice change of pace sometimes. That's what I want to see. If we got 8 minutes, maybe it's like 35 this season. So there's your off the wall one. But hey, what's up?
Hey, you're gonna see that lineup with Jaylin Williams out there.
That's also true. Also, shout out Jalen Williams. 3-point stroke looking good, Steve. 3-point stroke looking good. All right. We move now to the Denver Nuggets coming off of a 50-win season, a coaching change, an impressive playoff run that ended in 7 games against the Oklahoma City Thunder. But 50-32 last year, 4th in offense, 21st in defense, 9th in net rating. Defense obviously was much better during the postseason. Steve, I'll toss it to you first. What are you most excited about with this Denver Nuggets season?
I want to see what the next evolution is for this Nuggets team because they addressed a lot of concerns. They addressed a lot of question marks. They said, we're going to have versatility. We're going to have a bench. We're going to have everything we want. We're going to have defense. We're going to have a big that's better than any big we've had behind Nikola Jokic. We're going to do these things to make sure we have the best chance to make the best run. Mm-hmm. And so it's one of those things. I think it was Matt Moore who's had the concept where Coach David Adelman is not trying to fix things that are not broken within Denver. And he's been there for a very long time. And I think Matt Moore called it like a refurbishing, mm-hmm. a refreshment of sorts of this team. And what does that do for them? I think roster-wise, you know what you can do offensively around Nikola Jokic. I think the Cam Johnson fit is going to be very good. because of what he brings to the table with his cutting. And you can play through Nikola Jokic and you have guys in different areas who can do and make different plays. Christian Brown's a smart cutter. He's a good screener. Cam Johnson can kind of make those reads, make those cuts, can space the floor. But also, when he gets a dribble handoff, he's someone who, when we think about playmaking, right, we think of, you know, assists in making all the defense two on the ball. Sometimes it could be so simple as coming off a handoff, taking the space, holding a big, and making a play. Mm-hmm. And that's something Cam Johnson could do time and time again. But you look at little tweaks for Denver where it's your running action for Jokic. It's Jamal Murray spaced in the left corner and not Aaron Gordon. Aaron Gordon's on the wing. Stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And you look at the rotation where you start to see they had to kind of have a complementary skill set that they can play throughout the entire game, right? Mm-hmm. So we know what starting lineup is, but now you bring in Tim Hardaway Jr. He can shoot, he can cut. He fits in what they're doing. Mm-hmm. Bruce Brown, he can shoot, he can cut, he can handle the ball. Jonas Valanciunas, they can play through him. And I think that part is really important because now you have something for the second unit. So if they come in and play with Jokic, they're going to be doing that. You can still do a lot of that with JV. So now you just have a flow, no matter who you put out there, you can kind of play similarly. I'm excited to see how they build that out. Now, defensively is where they're going to have to butter their bread to hit the ceiling. Mm-hmm. I know it's very easy to knock on the door and say, Denver, number two, Denver, best team in basketball. I got to see what the defense looks like night in, night out. They have to be able to compete at a certain level if they want to hit the top of the Western Conference, if they want to compete for the championship. They're in the conversation. I would not be surprised if Denver makes a run, but if that defense is not at a certain level night in, night out, they're going to have some of the same issues they've had.
Mm-hmm. I think that's fair. And I think top of mind for me, Steve, as we are once again aligned, literally the others and scheme continuity is what I had for being excited about. Because like the obvious answer is I want to watch Nikola Jokic play basketball. That is with respect to all the other elite players that we have in the league. And we just talked about the Thunder that literally just had the MVP. Nikola Jokic, in my opinion, is still the best player in the league. Not that that can't change. Not that Shea can't take that leap this year. Not that Giannis can't take that leap. Leap sounds funny because Giannis is just 30-10-5 every year. But you know what I mean. Not that it can't be anyone else. I do think it's Jokic still. So, like, that's number one. The scoring, the playmaking, like, he's just absurd. But beyond that, a Denver team that actually has a level of scheme continuity when Jokic goes to the bench really excites me in theory. And I'm glad you hit on their ability to play out of JV. And I think JV now being in a situation to where like, okay, cool. My job is to mash who's the backup big for the team that we're playing. Like I can still do the high post stuff and flow in the handoffs. And if all else fails, oh, there's 12 on the clock. I could just put my shoulder into people and it's not insert starting center here. Like, we just talked about OKC. Oh, I got to deal with Jalen Williams instead of Chet in these early second quarter minutes? I can do that. That seems pretty cool. So, like, I am excited to see what that Denver portion is going to look like. And, like, related to that, I appreciate kind of the infrastructure this offseason that the Nuggets have put some of their younger guys in, at least most of them. Because you add a Tim Hardaway Jr., Julius Strawler feels more like a bonus if he pops versus we need him to be incredibly good for this to work. You know what I mean? You add Cam Johnson to the mix. And I guess like Strawler could also play some 3-4. So it's a similar deal. Like, okay, he could be a bonus versus we need him to pop. There's a young guy that you know, I have as an X-Factor, so we'll talk about him in a little bit. But these fans should help. Like Tim Hardaway Jr. should help. Cam Johnson should help. Now, I'm not going to step over everything you said because you nailed it, but I'm excited about
these
this.
Words seem these words sound familiar.
Yeah, this okay. We're gonna move on. Then I'm just saying I'm excited about this. Biggest question.
I think the other thing is if you look at what Coach Adelman has tried to do, it's understanding that the bench has to have an impact. Mm-hmm. And so we've talked about how there is still room for some of the younger players while them not having to carry all the weight they had to last year. But it's clear that hey, it can't be all on the starting unit or playing around the starters. So watching how they grow, the opportunities that Peyton Watson has within what they do, that's going to be very interesting. But none of that matters if they can't keep the ball in front.
Yeah, and sure enough, my biggest question is which level or what level would the defense be at this year? And related to that, Steve, as you know, we talked about the deal when it happened, I love the Cam Johnson trade for Denver. That was very good. I think on balance, Cam Johnson is a better player than MPJ. I do wonder in what ways the Nuggets will miss MPJ this year on the court. Like, I do think it's at least worth acknowledging, like, again, on balance, I think Cam is a better defender than MPJ. But you are technically getting smaller from Cam to MPJ. MPJ, when locked in, if they're put two on the ball and he's peeled in early like that, that is just 6'10". That's peeled in contesting shots for you. Versus Cam Johnson at 6'7", 6'8". MPJ, very good defensive rebounder, which also helps when you're playing that aggressively defensively, to have someone else on the back line that can end possessions for you. Cam Johnson is a fine rebounder. He isn't that. So, like, I wonder, like, how much will those margins matter? Will Cam make up for it with better, just in general, better off-ball awareness and better on-ball defense? Will that offset some of the rebounding and secondary rim protection? I think he can, and if it does, then I think, again, Denver's just going to be better because I think he is better. But how much will those margins matter is, like, a question that I have in the back of my head related to the bigger picture question that you already hit on. What is the, how good is this defense going to be?
Not you missing MPJ, oh my.
Well, no, I'm not going to say that. I don't think that's the case, but I'm just saying there are some elements where it's like, okay, this is going to be a little different. That is all I'm saying. Also, you know who should be super happy about these offseason moves, particularly with the JV addition?
Who?
Aaron Gordon. Because that brother's walking into a season like, okay, cool. I ain't got to worry about a heavy dose of me at the five until the postseason. That's neat. Mm. We got a reliable five now. It doesn't have to be. Well, the Nuggets are minus 15 with Jokic off the floor. We need this Jamal Murray, Aaron Gordon unit. It's cool that AG can just play some more four. And I do wonder, like, what that opens up for him usage-wise on both ends of the floor. Do we get to see him, like, blitz some pick and rolls now? Because there's a little bit more size behind him. Like, just minor stuff on that front. Who's your X-Factor or breakout candidate for this team, Steve?
I mean, my X-Factor is probably still, it's probably Cam Johnson.
Okay.
Depending on how good he is, if he's able to kind of bring some of what he's brought the last couple of years to what Denver does, that's huge. I mean, I think Christian Brown last year was the guy for me. Mm-hmm. Probably should go Peyton Watson in earnest because of his defensive ability and athleticism. I think that would help Denver a lot, but it's probably one of those three, the vets of the vets.
There's your group. Okay. Peyton Watson was mine. Like, I think, to your point, the athleticism certainly helps. Denver is a team that wants to get stops and get out on the break. And in general, like, the cutting is going to be there. His ability to guard and his ability to block shots is something that has popped and flashed throughout his career. You want more consistency overall, but, like, that has consistently flashed. If he is just night after night, strong on-ball defender, weak side shot blocker, the non-dunk finishing gets better for him, and he's more consistent with corner threes. That's scary for other teams if Peyton Watson is just he's just locked into 20 minutes a night because he's doing all those things. And so I am excited to see what this looks like for him because I think the athleticism is there. The talent is there. It is more of a consistency deal for me when it comes to him. And if he hits those notes, I think that changes life for that second unit and it gives them more versatility with how they want to close out games. So Peyton Watson is going to be my guy. What do you think Denver's best lineup is going to be, Steve?
Starting lineup.
Got you. We are aligned. And related to that, what is the lineup that you want to see? Is it just the starting lineup as well?
No, there's a few different combinations I would like to see Denver try and tap into. I think for me, it's probably, this one gets tricky, but give me Jamal Murray, mm-hmm. Cam Johnson, Aaron Gordon, Bruce Brown, Nikola Jokic.
Okay.
The tricky part is, like, I want to see Bruce Brown at the four and as a screener, but also with Jokic, but that also means you have to take Aaron Gordon off the floor. Mm-hmm. So I couldn't necessarily get to the where I wanted to go to a degree.
Yeah, I got you.
So that's kind of where I'm landing right now. What's yours?
Okay.
What you got, Zeke Nagy?
It's funny. I have him listed in my breakout / X-Factor bit. It's just like, hey, well, if the JV thing goes left at all, they're going to be looking for smaller options. That's another opportunity for Zeke Nagy. There's also the team building element. Like, he does have this mid-sized contract. So if he plays well enough, or if Denver feels like they need something else, like, he's going to be included by default. So, like, he's just kind of there. at the very least, but you know I still have Zeke Nagy style. That's a good call from you. But my lineup, Jamal Murray, Bruce Brown, Christian Brown, Peyton Watson, Aaron Gordon. So when we do get to see Aaron Gordon at the five, whether that's in the postseason or during the regular season, like that's probably the iteration that I want to see of that group. That is still a lot of defense. You have the extra ball handler in Bruce Brown. Also, Christian, I want to see like what are some of the on-ball reps for Christian Brown going to look like this year. But you do have that. You still have Gordon there. And if Peyton Watson shows out, then hey, we can have some fun with some cuts and some screens and things like that. So that's where I'm looking with the Denver Nuggets. We're going to take a quick break here, but once we return, we talk some Minnesota Timberwolves and we round out the rest of the Northwest Division. And we are back with this episode of the Dunker Spot. And Steve, it's time to talk about the Minnesota Timberwolves, a darn good basketball team that deserves more of our attention. They're coming off of a 49-33 season. They were eighth in offense, sixth in defense, fourth in net rating, one of the handful of teams that finished in the top 10 in both offensive and defensive rating last year, generally a mark of a very strong contender. But I think my excitement level starts with Anthony Edwards and the half-court growth. I think, you know, talked about this on a previous episode where there were the rumblings of him committing to building out more of a back-to-basket game, just being more comfortable in the mid-range area. You know, I'll be a little bit worried if this turns into like a, you know, like a DeMar DeRozan shot profile. I don't think it needs to be that with him coming off of the three-point season that he just had. But him being more comfortable in the middle of the floor seems like a good thing. Being able to round out more of the scoring profile, that seems like it'll be a positive. So I want to see how much of the work from the offseason carries over into this regular season and ideally the postseason as well. So I think it starts there with me in addition to just overall Minnesota defense. But I want to see what it looks like in the middle of the floor this year, Steve.
Why did DeMar DeRozan take a stray there? He's just chilling in Sacramento.
It wasn't
minding his own business.
I think that's fair. It wasn't meant as a stray. I was just trying to get like a reference point to like high mid-range volume. Like that was it.
Okay. I mean, the Anthony Edwards of it all is very important. They need his playmaking. They need his growth. We see the impact of that in the playoffs. We see how teams react, especially last season. We saw them put more two on the ball and put more pressure on him to make the right reads, make the right plays. So how is he taking those steps? Is he more decisive and understanding of reading the defense? What does that open up for Minnesota? I think for me, with the Minnesota Timberwolves, is continuity an advantage for them this season? Is that something that's going to help them at the start? Can they get off to a hot start and ride that momentum? It took them a while to kind of find it last year. We know they have a formula to have success because they found it and they made a run. But is the defense going to be there early on in the season? Is the offense going to have a little bit more movement so it's not just Anthony Edwards creating pick and roll, Anthony Edwards creating the post or at the elbow, or wherever they want to place him? Can they get something going a little bit more to open things up? What do the drives look like? What does Julius Randle do to help this team even more? We saw how important his drives were for them last year. Does Jaden McDaniels grow as far as being able to impact offensively and being able to get into the paint and be someone where, okay, he can keep an advantage, he can create more pressure with the drive, and now we can play out of that? Can they kind of get to where they need to be earlier than they did last year and set the tone that, you know, okay, it didn't go well against Oklahoma City, but we still have this. We can make the leaps we need to offensively. And then defensively, you know, you have to deal with us. I think that's the biggest thing for me with Minnesota. They have the evolution. They have continuity. Can they find the right notes early?
I like that. I'm glad you brought up Jaden McDaniels in particular, because the question I was going to ask for you is, like, what would you like to see? Like, what would offensive evolution in terms of his role look like? Like, would you like to see him not necessarily running like 15 pick and rolls a game, like that feels like a pretty big leap, but like, do you want to see him bring the ball up more to like trigger sets for them? Like, is that a way to get an off ball more, take some of the creation burden off of Julius Randle as well? Like, can you sprinkle in more for him to help with this evolution?
Just more versatility. I think for the biggest thing is for Minnesota, they've got to be able to get stops and run and be able to outlet to anyone. And not just everyone comes back to the ball. Everyone's got to run, put pressure. So I think Jaden McDaniels has a skill set where he can cut. We know he can attack in transition. He can get downhill off some handoffs. He can knock some shots down. Can he kind of just put together a package that boosts the Wolves' offense? And can he be aggressive within that? And can he be someone where, okay, we got to we got to watch out for his timely baskets, his timely aggression. We can't necessarily just play off him to a certain degree. Mm-hmm. I think that's the biggest thing for me. I think the initiation point, it'll be interesting to see how they build the boat with who initiates when and how they flow into different things.
Mm-hmm.
That's more so where my mind's at.
Okay. No, I think that makes sense. So I think for me, this is getting to like the biggest question for Minnesota. Like, I've seen Nikhil Alexander Walker now in Atlanta. So like, question for me, like non-star slash starter division is, are the young wings ready to fill that gap? Are we ready for more Jalen Clark? Are we ready for more Terrence Shannon Jr.? Like, are either one of those guys ready to solidify? Yes, I can defend. Yes, I can drive. Yes, I can juice this transition attack. Yes, I will also shoot well enough to where teams can't ignore me. Like, that's very much a thing I'm looking for with Jalen Clark in particular, because the defense, when he got real minutes, was fantastic, in my opinion. They obviously trusted him to take on some tough assignments when he was in those games where he got real minutes. But teams were very comfortable saying, okay, well, we can put our center on you sometimes, or we're just going to help off aggressively to kind of plug the paint. So can he do more there? With Terrence Shannon Jr., like, he is just a ball of energy. Can get downhill. He will post for you if necessary. Like, he has some real on-ball juice and can get into you defensively. Like, is he able to bring a level of consistency to where you're not feeling the loss of Nikhil Alexander Walker? So that's probably top of mind for me in regards to, like, the others. We already talked about Jaden McDaniels a little bit. So I think that's where it starts with me. So where would you go? So you already alluded to some stuff. Was there anything else you wanted to hit on the question front with Minnesota?
No, I mean, I think I nailed most of my questions. I think it's just going to be which one of those younger guys is going to rise to the occasion, especially early on. You're going to have the opportunity to play your way into the rotation, earn that trust, and help impact the team. Like, I think when you look at someone like Rob Dillingham,
mm-hmm.
I liked his first preseason effort, to be honest with you. I thought he, you know, obviously we know what he can do scoring the ball, but I thought he did some good things early on as far as being decisive and understanding, okay, I drive, I drew help, I kick, I did my job. I think those are the type of plays that earn you more minutes. You mentioned the wings. I think they have built-in opportunities because of their energy and effort. Can they build that into a larger role that impacts the Wolves? And you know, how does Mike Conley continue to fit into this? Because mm-hmm. they're going to need his playmaking, and they're going to need him to be decisive and aggressive. They just have an overall package.
Okay. Fair enough with you. I think last thing I'd add before we get into the X-Factor portion, I am curious to see, like, does the distribution of 4 or 5 minutes change at all with Minnesota? How often do they lean into Randle and Naz Reid together? How often are either of those two tethered to Rudy Gobert? And I guess just in general, just backup center spot, is it just going to be Randle or Naz Reid? Or does either of the young bigs that they have until now get some regular season minutes at the very least? That's another thing that's kind of like top of mind for me with them.
That'll be interesting, but I think the best thing for Minnesota would be to have combinations to where we feel good with Rudy and Julius. We feel good with Rudy and Naz. We feel good with Julius and Naz.
Mm-hmm.
We feel good with Naz at the five or Julius at the five. And if they can shape shift and feel good on both ends of the floor, that's a big win for them.
Yeah, I think it's some Jaden at the four. We like it. Who's your breakout or X factor or breakout candidate or X factor for this Wolves group, Steve?
I think it's Jaden McDaniels. I think Jaden McDaniels is the X factor.
I think
they need him to take a step up and make a leap for them to be able to kind of have him be a pressure point offensively, and they need his defense. So I think the more he grows, the better off they'll be.
Okay. I mentioned the wings already. You mentioned Rob Dillingham. And so because we haven't talked about him yet, and he's obviously a very important piece to this team, Dante DiVincenzo, you need a good year. You want a level of consistency from him. We know he can defend. We know what his shooting opens up, both off the catch and even some of the transition pull-ups that he can flow into. his ability to play off of Anthony Edwards when they want to size up a little bit in the backcourt is obviously important. And so if you are getting like a B-plus or level of consistency on both ends of the floor from Dante DiVincenzo, that certainly enhances their line of versatility. That enhances their ability to perform on both ends of the floor. So I'll go Dante since we've already talked about the younger guys.
I have a secondary one.
What you got?
A bald Rudy Gobert.
The barber? No.
He came back with a bald head and finishing. I don't know what you want me to do.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting to do like the, for my SpongeBob fans out here, like seeing Rudy in that first preseason game immediately going into the King Neptune reference from the SpongeBob movie. Absolutely fried me.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Anyway, what do you think Minnesota's best lineup is going to be this year, Steve?
I think it's probably going to be Dante, Anthony Edwards, Jaden McDaniels, Julius Randle, Rudy Gobert.
Ooh, we were so close. We were so close. I had Ant, Dante, Jaden, Rudy. I had Naz Reid as what I think will be the best lineup. I will say, if we do get more of like second half of the year slash post-injury Julius Randle, just more often this year, like that's probably going to be the answer. Because just looking at the numbers last year, with those five, with Randle in, it was a minus 15 in 247 minutes. With Reed in Randle's place, it was plus 23 in 131 minutes. But again, like if Julius Randle is going to be the decisive shot-making version of himself that we saw, particularly in the postseason, like I think it still be positive with Nas. But I do think that group flips to the positive this year. So like I think that's a good call on your part.
My secondary one was Mike Conley, Anthony Edwards, Jaden McDaniels, Naz Reid, Julius Randle.
Mm.
But they need the Reed. They need the Reed Randle of it all to hold up defensively and to punish switches.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if we're there yet. Like I've liked the aggression from Naz Reid.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, it's just if you're coaching against that lineup, it's switch and help or switch and contain, and it's a poison you can choose.
Right? Mm-hmm.
Until so it's like how much of that scoring would have to make me feel like okay, we're at a disadvantage. That's my concern.
Okay. I think that's fair. What is the lineup that you want to see?
I just said it.
I just asked another question. We are aligned. Ant, Dante, Jaden, Julius, and Nas is the group that I want to see. So there we go. Plus 11 in 171 minutes last year, if you want that on the docket. It is now time to move to the Portland Trailblazers, Steve. And let me tell you, two things for me on the excited front. Like, one, just Jan Hansen is a concept. I'm in. I just want to see what that looks like. I don't know how, but he might average 12 minutes a game this year. He might average 25 because of injuries, trades, whatever. I just want to see what Jan Hansen looks like. But beyond that, brother, this Portland Trailblazer defense, more Tumani Kamara, Drew Holiday in the mix, more Donovan Klinger. That's, hey, listen, man, Drew at the top, Tumani at the middle, Donovan at the back. That's a spine of a strong defense, Steve. They were really good post All-Star break last year. I'm excited to see what the full grouping looks like now. This is going to be some good stuff in Portland, I think, at least on the defensive end.
The Blazers get Drew Holiday, and the Kais gives them their first compliment since 2019. That's great.
We ain't my dad like I wasn't talking about Tumani Kamara last year. Come on.
Okay, before that?
Well, you know, the defense was, you know. Well, did some stuff, you know.
Yeah, I'm noticing. It's all right, though. I think Portland has been an intriguing group for me over the last couple of years as far as when you look at the talent they have and the names they have. And it's like, I don't know what this means as far as success goes, but I think there's something building. Mm-hmm. And you kind of got a little bit of the payoff for them last year in that second half of the season where the defense started to become a base. And now, is that going to become their identity? They have a lot of lineups where they should have a lot of good defense out there and a lot of good defenders. What does that do for them? I think they're a little bit more streamlined rotation-wise. Obviously, you wish Scoot Henderson wasn't hurt, but there's runway. Obviously, bigs more aligned. You have two very intriguing options there. You got a lot of wings who can throw out in different positions. You can do some switching. You got Drew Holiday, who will help them on both ends of the floor as far as being someone who can play make, can play on and off ball, can defend multiple positions.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a little bit more of a structure. You have a little bit of an identity. You're going towards something with a clearer vision. I think that's important for Portland. And so I'm intrigued to see what that looks like for them. I mean, I think it's difficult because they showcase what they can be, but you can't copy and paste that into a new year. So can they establish themselves defensively from the start? Is that going to allow them to compete and run and get easier baskets and become annoying in the Western Conference, which I think is probably the next step for them as they continue to try and figure out exactly what the next move is. Can Shaedon Sharpe continue to grow? I think that's probably intriguing. So I know you're probably going to ask me who the breakout is, the X factor is. It's Shaedon Sharpe for me.
How much is in
the tank? Can he elevate? I think we've seen flashes where he's reading the defense. He's getting downhill. He's making shots. He's attacking. Can he put that together consistently? And what does that do for Portland if he does that with the amount of wings that they have? Who can slot and do different things? You know, how does Jeremy Grant impact this team? Is he bought in defensively? That's where I think it kind of goes for me. But I think there's a lot of size that they could throw out there. And there's a lot of defense that they should be able to play.
Sure is. There sure is. I think as I get into some of my base Portland questions, like one, no Scoot Henderson right now as he recovers from a hamstring injury. What does he look like once he returns? And then just broader strokes with Scoot, what is the next leap for him? Is it going to be the half court finishing for him? Does he take another step there to become more of a threat? Because I think the playmaking, some of the, you know, the speed in which he's running these pick and rolls, the probes and things like that took a step forward last year, in my opinion. I think he was more patient. He read the defense better. So I expect that's going to continue to get better. Is he going to become a better finisher? Is he going to have better footwork when it comes to like the floaters and the mid-range pull-ups in particular? Because like I trust the mechanics as a catch and shoot threat. He just has to make more of those. But as he's getting into some of these intermediate shots, what kind of step does he take in that regard? So I want to see what Scoot looks like in that regard. Because if he does take that leap, that makes some of the future team building for Portland, those decisions a lot easier. Like you were just locked in as core piece, right? So there's the Scoot portion for me. Talked about Portland's defense second half of last year. Denny Avdia was just kind of absurd in the second half of last season. Like last year, overall, it was 17-7-4. Very good shooting splits. I think 55-37-78 splits. We're talking about twos, threes, free throws. 20 games post All-Star break, Steve, he's at 23-10-5. I don't think he's going to have the same usage just because of the guys that are going to be in the building, namely Drew. He's going to be doing more things. But Denny can make decisions with the ball in his hands. Denny has gotten better. He's gotten more aggressive as a driver, first and foremost, but he's also gotten better as a driver. Like, is he actually just 19-7-4 now in a credible catch and shoot threat from behind the arc? If he's legit fringe all-star level now, one, that makes Portland better heading into this season. But two, as you talk about, you know, we both have Shaedon Sharpe as our X-Factor guy now. Like, Denny's also pretty young, older than Shaedon, but still pretty young. If Chauncey Billups doesn't trust Shaedon Sharpe defensively enough to get consistent minutes or at least be a consistent starter, do we start hearing Shaedon Sharpe trade rumblings now? Because we have Denny, we have Tumani Kamara, who also is in the wing slash forward room. Like, what does Denny, if he is actually just this good, what does that mean for Portland in the short and the long term is a question that I also have. Jump in, because I know you're ready to yell at me.
That man already traded Shaedon Sharpe. That's crazy.
I haven't. I'm just saying, like, as you mentioned, there are the flashes, and I've liked a lot of them, particularly when he's like flowing off of pin downs and attacking quick. Like he can float and elevate in the jumpers. He can get all the way to the rim. Like the offensive stuff is real for him, in my opinion. Chauncey was also benching that man because of defensive effort. I'm just like, hey, I kind of need Shaedon to hit a level consistently so he can actually showcase all of these things he can do on the other end. Because I think he has special potential offensively. And so that's where I'm just like, that combined with Denny just did all of that and just in general is a good player is where I'm like, does Chauncey go upstairs? Like, nah, we are locking in with, you know, Scoot's going to be a core piece. Denny's going to be a core piece. Tumani's going to be a core piece. Donovan Kling's going to be a core piece. Shaedon, as we get closer to contract decisions with him, does he become odd man out if he doesn't earn the trust? That's more of my bigger thing.
I understand it. Okay. I do want to see the Hans of it all for the Blazers. I want to see what that big fella does around the cutting. The passing he has is electric. So I just want to see him play basketball and what that does for their second unit. I'm intrigued. I want to see what that looks like.
I am right there with you, Steve. What do you think Portland's best lineup is going to be this year?
Ooh, best lineup?
Mm-hmm.
Let's probably go Drew Holiday, Shaedon Sharpe. Give me Jeremy Grant, give me Tumani Kamara, give me Donovan Clingan.
Okay. We're pretty close on the lineups here. I think the best lineup is going to be Drew, Denny Avdia, Tumani Kamara, Jeremy Grant, Donovan Clingan. However you want to designate Denny, Tumani, Grant, like either of those can be like 2-4. But I think it's gonna be that. And just to give you a number, Steve, I'm sure you are very excited about this one. But this blew my mind as I was like getting notes together for this. It was one of those things where like watching them post All-Star break, I knew it felt good, but I didn't know what the exact number was. There were 88 minutes last year with Denny, Tumani, Jeremy Grant, and Donovan Klingon on the floor together. They won those 88 minutes by 60 points. 6-0. I don't know if it's going to be that, when the sample grows, as it better grow this year. But like those four plus Drew, I think will be the best lineup. And I think, you know, related to the conversation we just had about Shaedon Sharpe, I think in an ideal world, the answer is Shaedon instead of Drew plus those four. Because at that point, you just feel super good about like the core moving forward and Shaedon being a part of that. But I think the best version is going to be Drew, Denny, Tumani, Jeremy, and Donovan Clingan. I am excited to see that group. That's a lot of length. That's a lot of defense. Enough shooting. But I think that's going to be a knockout group. What is the lineup you want to see, Stevie? It surely includes the big
Drew Holiday. No.
Oh. Huh.
Come on. We're playing defense over here. Give me Drew Holiday.
Mm-hmm.
Give me Matisse Thybulle.
Okay.
Give me Tumani Kamara.
Mm-hmm.
Give me Jeremy Grant. Give me Donovan Clingan.
Okay. All defense. I respect it. For me, Drew, Shaedon Sharpe, Denny Avdia, Tumani Kamara, Young Hansen. That's my five.
Okay.
Give me the playmaking. Okay. Give me the defense. Give me the shot creation for Shaedon Sharpe if it hits. That feels like a fun group to me. And finally, Steve, it's time to talk about the Utah Jazz coming off of a 17-65 season. Not what they wanted, but kind of what they wanted. 24th in offense, 30th in defense, 28th in net rating. I think my excitement level comes in two layers. One, if this summer was any indication, Lauri Markkanen might just be back. Last year was very odd for him. If we're just back to flame throwing, also can create a little bit more off the bounce. Lauri Markkanen, I am in for this version of this Utah Jazz team to add some excitement and to add just a level of stability offensively. And also, if teams come calling for Lauri Markkanen, because he's incredibly good and Utah is still like in the rebuilding stage. But either way, if Lauri Markkanen is back, I'm in. And then naturally, like I want to see Ace Bailey in this environment. Like I was intrigued by the summer league showing for him. And so just in general, what does rookie look like in this context? And under Will Hardy, with him being able to scheme him up and get him easier looks so he doesn't have to like self-create a ton. So that's where my excitement starts, Steve. What are you looking forward to for this Utah season?
We got the vision going now. We're not playing the games anymore of we got vets and we got young people and now we don't have the vets. We ran out of vets. There's no more vets in the pantry anymore. There's a couple of them in there, Swoop to Kevin Love and Kyle Anderson and Yusuf Nurkic. But it's not the same as what we had going on before. It's time to see how good these guys are. We are going to get definitive answers on what this team is going forward. Will Hardy, you got an extension. It's time for you to do your thing. And I'm intrigued to see what Will Hardy concocts for this Utah Jazz team because they have size, they have versatility, they have guys who do different things. We know he's willing to invert the offense and put different guys in different places and use Lauri Markkanen in all type of different ways. He could do that for Ace Bailey. We could see some growth from Cody Williams. Kyle Filipowski could try and be Lauri Markkanen again. We got guards who can get downhill. Like, I don't know how many games the Utah Jazz are going to win. I do know that the Utah Jazz are going to play some fun basketball at some point in time with some nice unis. So what does that look like? Who emerges from this? Like, I think I'm excited to see Lauri Markkanen be Lauri Markkanen again, especially because of the different ways that he can be used. What does Walker Kessler look like? Outside of, hey, big dog, you ain't want to pay me?
I was about to say my secondary question to what is Walker Kessler going to look like is how long is Walker Kessler going to be there? Because it feels like it's been a very consistent loop of we think Walker Kessler is good. You going to pay him? No, but we think he's good. Okay, cool, trade him then. You bet. Two first. Well, no. Well, we're going to keep him because he's good. Can we get a decision on Walker Kessler, please? I feel like he's a Laker in like eight different universes. Like Walker Kessler got to
be careful. Be careful. We did this with Miles Turner for seven consecutive years, and then that man is a buck.
Steve, we got it. We need to get Walker Kessler on a podcast to pitch himself.
No. Still don't know how Miles Turner got that off. I don't know how the North did not remember that. We delete. Mm-hmm. No.
Okay, fair enough. Can I break your brain real quick, Steve? Because I said this when it happened, because everyone was getting very obvious jokes off when the deal happened, since Colin Sexton is now Charlotte Hornet and Yusuf Nurkic is now here. I am intrigued by how Yusuf Nurkic is going to be used in this Utah context. Like, Will Hardy just has a history of moving his centers around and spacing them and having them play making different spots. Or like, Yusuf Nurkic, if nothing else, if absolutely nothing else, is one of the best screeners in the sport and is one of the best passers that we have among seven-footers. I think Will Hardy can get some good stuff out of Yusuf Nurkic, at least offensively. I am not going to make any bones about what the Yusuf Nurkic defense is, especially at this stage. Yusuf Nurkic on offense intrigues me under Will Hardy.
Okay, two things very quickly. One, a Yusuf Nurkic compliment, as well as a Portland Trailblazer compliment. Are you okay? Is everything all right? Anything you want to talk about? Number two, I'm afraid I've got some bad news. He's going to screen, he's going to roll, he's going to space, and you're going to be mad at the defense. My other jazz part is the guard room. Mm-hmm. Isaiah Collier, Keontae George, Walter Clayton Jr. There's some talent there. Who emerges? Collier, he drives, gets downhill like a bowling ball. Keontae George, I think, has a boatload of talent. Does this situation kind of allow him to evolve as opposed to the in-between of, I could score. Oh, y'all need me to play make.
I ain't gonna do nothing.
But I can score.
Oh, like the, sorry to cut you off. The Keontae George thing reminds me so much of like, this is like petty dynamic where it's like, hey, we appreciate, can you do something else? And instead of just doing the something else, like, oh, you only want me to do this. I bet. And it's just like, no, that's not what I, that's not what I said. That's not what it's like you have like a sibling or something. Like, hey, can you turn your music down a little bit? And then they just turn off their iPad. And it's just like, that's not what I told you to do. You don't have to do that. I just want the volume to be a little lower. I can hear you type beat. I want Keontae George to find some balance.
gotta walk over and unplug or something.
Yeah.
Happy now.
Yeah, I didn't say that.
What else do we have with the Jazz?
Oh, man. Well, gosh darn it. I think we both kind of gone over, like, breakouts and X-Factors, et cetera. I think for me, like, the guard room, who emerges between Collier and George, because I am excited to see what Walter Clayton. It wouldn't surprise me if Walter Clayton just ends up being the best guard out of the group in light of him just having, I feel like he has, like, better feel than George at the very least. I wouldn't say Collier. I just really worry about the shot with Collier. You already mentioned the drives and the playmaking for him. But Walter Clayton Jr. just being a bucket feels like he probably just pops more in this context, especially with how Will Hardy schemes things up offensively. He just should just have fruitful opportunities off the ball. So excited about that. And then Kyle Filipowski, to your earlier point, Steve, and you made this joke on the pod last season about, hey, I can be Lauri Markkanen too. He does just have a lot of juice to him. Can screen, can roll, can pass, like can make decisions on the move, which guys that tall generally aren't supposed to be able to do that. And so, like, him with more volume and more responsibility, that does excite me. And if he is good, that can indeed make the Lauri Markkanen decision a little bit easier. Or if you do just want to keep Lauri in the room, like, those two can play together and you just have a lot of size and a lot of size and skill in the front court. So, like, he could change some things for them. So I do appreciate the Kyle Filipowski's shout. I am right there with you. And now for the fun part, Steve. What do you think Utah's best lineup is going to be? Because I think best within their context has a lot of different meanings. And so I'm curious to see where you go with this.
Walker Kessler, Lauri Markkanen, Ace Bailey, Keontae George, Walter Clayton Jr.
Okay. Okay. You want to laugh at my best lineup? So not laugh, sure. But I went Collier, Ace, George Niang, Lauri Markkanen, Walker Kessler.
George Niang?
At least the early portion of the season. I feel like he's going to be like a quiet, like plus minus monster for them in like the first month and a half before he is inevitably traded somewhere for a team that wants shooting. And then they get upset about the defense. But this is going to be one of those things you go to NBA.com. It's like, huh, they played 132 minutes all season long. A plus 2.3. That's neat. It feels like that kind of vibe. Drives from Collier, playmaking from Collier, shooting across the board, rim protection from Walker Kessler. I think the defense is going to be solid with him on the court. Now, when it goes off, that's a whole other, you know. But that profiles to me as best net rating on Utah Jazz. So there we go. Might have thought too hard about it, but that's where I went. What is the lineup that you want to see? Or is it the same one that you just listed?
Honestly, let's go. Let's get size. Let's get weird with this. Let's be odd. Let's go Keontae George.
Okay.
Let's go Cody Williams. Let's go Ace Bailey. Let's go Lauri Markkanen. Let's go Kyle Filipowski. Why not? Let's just do something.
Okay. Okay. Which related to that, like, actually, we don't even have enough time in the pod. I will just say, I hope we continue to see steps from Cody Williams. I think we will, as he's gotten a little bit stronger. I want to see more and better from Cody Williams moving forward. The lineup I want to see, Isaiah Collier, Walter Clayton Jr., Ace Bailey, Lauri Markkanen, and Kyle Filipowski together. That is my group. And that is the Northwest Division preview, Steve. Any closing thoughts before we get out of here?
No, let's get out of here.
Okay. I thought you would have had a Wimby related free throw. We will say that for the next episode of the pod, but thank you for listening to this episode of the Dunker Spot. If you haven't already, please subscribe. We are on Apple, Spotify, RIP Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. Also subscribe to the Yahoo Sports YouTube channel. We are live every Tuesday, every Friday. So come rock with us there. If you are more of a YouTube listener slash watcher, you can follow me on socials at the Kai CBA. You can follow Steve on socials at Steve Jones 20. Join our online Dunker Spot watch parties. If you want to talk hoops and football and wrestling and music and anything else, come rock with us, come have some fun. And with that, we will catch y'all later in the week.